Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Woj Pod. Get the inside scoop on all the biggest NBA news as the biggest names in the game join ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski for the Woj Pod, featuring in-depth conversations, breaking news reaction, and analysis, and coverage of the biggest events on the NBA calendar, as well as an occasional deep dive into some of the most notable events in NBA history. The playoffs are here, so check it out. Follow the Woj Pod now, as well as the right time, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you're looking for world-class soccer, ESPN Plus is where to find it. The best teams, the biggest stars, and over 20 international leagues and tournaments. La Liga, Bundesliga, MLS, FA Cup, Copa del Rey, and more. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more drip. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Fridays. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on, man?
Nothing. Happy to be here as usual.
I have not asked you about this. I just want to throw this out here briefly. Your man, Luca. Because I've been a Luka holdout, because I'm a holdout on everybody. I've been burned too many times by getting out ahead on these things, right? Dude, if that dude makes shots, it's canceled Christmas. Now, the thing is, he doesn't make as many shots as people seem to realize that he does, in fact, make. I was actually thinking about him and the Mavericks with the whole Mike Krzyzewski retirement thing, because you and I grew up at a time where, like, Duke meant something.
Yeah.
And whether you like what it meant was a completely and totally different situation. You realize this, though? That especially in the last 10 years, there's a whole generation of kids that did not grow up hating Duke. Like, not that every kid grew up hating Duke, but they have not been, like, something to detest in the last 10 years.
It feels like everybody kind of hated Duke, but maybe it's just the circles that I was running in. If you weren't a Duke person, it seemed like even Duke was the opposition to the Fab Five. And I know that that doesn't add up necessarily, but when you think of what is Duke basketball back then, you think of the Fab Five was the antidote to it. I like found myself identifying with the Fab Five and also aspiring to be more culturally and socially and image-wise. Even if I was not that, that's more what I wanted to be. And I felt like everybody in the culture kind of, like, that's cool. Like, that's what's always cool. So even if you're a middle-aged dude or a woman who's a teenager, like, it didn't feel like there was just a certain subset of the society that hated Duke. It felt like either you went to Duke or you hated Duke.
Well, you gotta forget this though, man. Then there's white folks, right?
But that's what I mean. I thought the white folks were the same. Like, they recognized what cool is. They wanted to be cool.
But they also wanted to be white dudes who were good at basketball, right? Like this is what Duke basketball did, especially in the 80s. Because I think the context that gets lost in this is that in the 1980s, college basketball was still integrating. Not that there weren't black people on every team necessarily, right? But the idea that somebody had a team with nothing but black players like Georgetown was a revolutionary idea still in the 1980s, right? And then that started building up and getting bigger and bigger. And then you started having more teams that were winning and didn't really have no white dudes. And then Duke came around. And so when you say they are the antidote to the Fab Five, hold up, dog. Let's think about this for a second, okay? This is, again, something you don't really have really after the mid-90s, which is programs that we just readily associate with blackness, or right, teams like the Fab Five that we readily associate with blackness. Louisville basketball used to be that, because the thing, like, Kentucky folks used to call them, rather than the Cardinals, the Blackbirds, right? Because they had all these black dudes on the team. That's who Duke played against in the 1986 championship game. Like, that's their, you know, when they first get up to success. Now, let's think about that time and, like, who, like, the black teams were, right? Nolan Richardson and them 40 Minutes of Hell, John Chaney and those Temple teams, the Fab Five, UNLV, Georgetown, and in, you know, with the morning and you get to the Mutombo time and all of that stuff. Dog, Duke ran through all of them. Every single one of them. They ran through them all. And this is at the same time that you got the Celtics with all those white dudes, right?
And it's UNC too, which, like, wasn't a black school, but it was the black school.
Right.
In that little tobacco triangle or whatever they call it, the tech triangle down there.
blackness is a key part of the history of North Carolina basketball. Like Dean Smith integrating the Atlantic Coast Conference and everything that comes down to it. Dog, them white dudes ran through all of them. Like Christian Laettner, all of them. Shaq gave it to them. Mourning gave it to them. Larry Johnson, like he took the L's too, but Larry Johnson gave it to them. Jamal Mashburn gave it to them. We can go up and down the list. They gave it to any team that we were like, yo, that one's ours.
I guess there's a symbolic thing that a certain group would feel really good about watching in those moments, especially as we see black people kind of taking over basketball.
Right. And they gave it to them with elbows, right? Yeah. Like it wasn't like Duke beating you was not on some, we are going to outskill you and beat you with our superior intellect. They were like, we ain't scared of y'all. Right. Like that was the big thing, because in the end, you go watch white dudes play basketball against black dudes. It's a little fear factor that comes in there. Duke ain't have none of it. Like the teams that Duke had that made them famous, like made them a program. They ain't have none of that. They was ready to scrap it out with you right back.
That's funny because you're right. They became like the private school hoity-toity kind of like that was the image of them. But that wasn't how they played, at least at that time. They were down for all of it. And you made a point. I guess it was on Wednesday's pod or Monday's pod. You said something. You might have been quoting somebody else. But this reminded me of it is that the racism in or one. Yeah, you said one of your friends said that it's not that the racism in Boston is different. It's just that they fight in Boston. They express it as different. Like Boston isn't necessarily more racist than, say, D.C., where I live right now. It's just the people in D.C. are like, all right, well, we're going to do a little quiet.
Yes.
Whisper amongst our friends what we're thinking. And Boston ain't going to tell you to your face and be fully willing.
Right.
To scrap it out. Your blackness is doesn't scare me.
Hold on. Not just willing to scrap it out.
Looking to.
Hoping.
Yes.
Wishing. Right.
There's nowhere else on earth, or at least I can speak for the United States. There's no city that I've ever been in. I'm sure you growing up in Texas, maybe it's different, but no major metropolitan area that I've ever been in. The general feeling from the white society is like, hey, we scrap it out. Like that is their reputation. They're proud of.
Yeah. Well, see, white folks in Houston, I mean, they down to give it to you, but they ain't talking about scrapping nothing. You know what I'm saying? Why fight when you can squeeze? Like, like that's the outlook on it, but that's what Duke was. And also you made a good point. So like, Danny Ferry and Jay Billis, all right? Like, those are kind of one archetype of it. But they are not Christian Laettner and Bobby Hurley. We're like, you know about Bobby Hurley's daddy being a basketball coach at St. Anthony's. But St. Anthony's was not some fancy school. Like, St. Anthony's was a prep school in Jersey City that was working with some hard scrabble young men. Like, it was a low-tuition Jesuit school. They eventually just had to close it down because they just could not keep it open at the prices that they were charging in order to achieve their goal. And Bobby Hurley's daddy, when he was not coaching basketball, was a probation officer, right? Christian Laettner is not of Duke stock, for lack of a better term. Like, that's not what he comes from. So, like, that's what they were. And so, I totally get it. If you a white dude and you love basketball and you are watching, it's like, dog, we ain't really out here no more. You know what I'm saying? Like we not really making our mark no more. And then Duke comes around and this is all the personality of Krzyzewski. Like everybody's going to get out here and talk about, you know, what a great coach he was. And they'll try to like sanitize this up. Everybody, I feel like, has missed all the fun of Krzyzewski. And the fun of it is right there. I brought these white dudes in here and we going to beat all of y'all. Watch, see what happens.
I mean, I can almost identify with that, even though like I'm not white, obviously, but like I understand the sentiment of coming into somewhere, feeling like you are the minority because you are, and feeling like there are assumptions about you because you are, and then shoving it in everybody's face. Because like the assumption is the white dudes shoot, but they're not down for this action. And but right. They're like, you know what? We gonna out-grit you. And I mean, I didn't see it that way when I was young because it was like Duke University, white dudes. They became the like establishment within basketball to a lot of young white dudes. And I guess elementary or middle school, we didn't have white people in our school till I went to a magnet school in high school. So I had to like drive 30 minutes to school every day. And there it was probably like 40% white. But prior to that, when I was like watching college basketball, it was just all black people in the school. And we saw Duke as like representing the stuff that we all felt like we were raging against.
Yes, yes. And add to it, by the way, not just what you described about with the white dudes. Now add to it the feeling we losing everything, but we can keep this, right? Right. Like add that whole component. And so to me, that's kind of what you give a Duke basketball. And with Black people, it's interesting because there is a group of Black people of a certain age who are Duke fans. Like these are people who were now in their late 40s and early 50s because they were Johnny Dawkins fans, you know, because before Duke became a thing, you could root for Duke and be Black and not be a problem because the announcers hadn't just decided that they was going to root for Duke in every game because it was they white dudes. I don't think that any of us who grew up hating Duke would have hated Duke nearly as much if we ain't have to listen to Billy Packer and Dick Vitale and everybody else act like they wasn't out here hacking all the time, act like Christian Laettner didn't step on that dude's chest, right? Didn't act like these cats weren't actually the same as the dudes that you were rooting against. They just happened to be white.
Is there a modern day equivalent, or since college basketball is so transient and everyone's turned to one and done, and I guess NBA also, people switch teams. But I'm just imagining that there were assumptions made. If you weren't from Durham and your daddy didn't go to Duke, if I met you in high school or in middle school and you was like, I love Duke, I don't have no affiliation with Duke, but I love Duke, you are telling me something about who you are as a person. Is there a modern day equivalent where it's like, if you choose to be a fan of this team, you are absolutely telling me something?
No, not really. Although, hey, at some point it might be the Mavericks. I don't know why nobody's talking about this, man. I looked up at the Mavericks. Now, I didn't do it this game because the last game they played because I was too tired and it was too late. But the game before, it was three white dudes on the floor at all times, right? And we're just going to act like this isn't going on. I'm not saying it's a problem to have three white dudes on the floor at all times. It's a little different. Like, they showing the shots in the crowd. The Mavericks ain't got no Black person whose jersey you wear. It's all Luka and Boban. And I just don't understand. Honestly, they shouldn't even make Boban jerseys in regular people's sizes. You should only be wearing a Boban jersey if you Boban size.
It don't look right. Is it the Patriots? Because when you just said the jersey thing, it reminded me of the fact that, like, when you go to Patriots games or you see the Patriots at Super Bowls, you see their fans walking around. It's like, you hard-pressed to find a McCourty jersey.
Yes, yes.
Looking for a Chung real hard.
Oh, I've seen a Chung. When I went to that Super Bowl in Atlanta, I saw a Chung and I
was
saw
it an Asian person wearing a Chung jersey?
No, I don't think it was Pablo because he was with me.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it, right? Like, that would be it. But no, they don't. The Patriots... because I don't know nobody that roots for them that ain't local. Like, it's interesting thing about the Patriots is over all that time, they never became like the Steelers did or like the Cowboys did.
If you meet somebody who is 45 years old and they spent their whole life in the Midwest and they have no connection to New England, their parents lived in Nebraska and they grew up in Nebraska and they're like, hey, who you pull for? And they're like, hey, I'm a big Pats guy. It's like, you tried to tell me something, aren't you? You're expressing something more. Because if you choose to be associated with the empire that has no, like, Black stars.
Well, and no personality, no fun. What's there to root for? Like at least with Duke, I can look at it and I can see what there was to root for, you know? But there wasn't nothing to root for. Now, see, the other thing about Duke with that, though, is that
would,
yeah, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. That's all it is. That's a real bottom line oriented situation, right? But the other thing with Duke was that thing rotated through time, right? Like, there would be ebbs and flows of what the roster would look like. So, like, 99, that's Krzyzewski's best team. That is the Elton Brand, Corey Maggette, William Avery, Trajan Langdon, young Shane Battier, young Chris Carriwell. But that was right after Duke had got sorry for a little bit. And then next thing you know, Wojo was gone, and it was just the blackest Duke team that you had ever seen.
I remember liking Trajan Langdon. Like, I hated everybody at Duke. Maybe it was just because it was like early stages of somebody who was just like a sharpshooter. But I remember liking the Alaskan Assassin and not really liking anybody else. But I think also what added to this was the type of Black players that they had and like what people thought of them. Because like Grant Hill was the guy. And Grant Hill daddy, he ain't no softy. Like, he's not the one. Grant Hill daddy was outspoken football player.
Yeah, but he went to Yale.
Yeah, I know. But still, I guess Grant Hill was like, all right, well, you got to be that type of Black person.
Yeah.
And maybe I was closer to that image of a Black person, but that's not what I wanted to be. That's not what I aspire to be. I wanted to be Jalen Rose. Like, you wanted to be a guy who was like tough and like wore his black socks and baggy clothes. Yeah. Like, you didn't want to be the guy who showed up to school with a sport coat.
Right. Poor Grant Hill. He just picked the wrong side on that one. He carries that too. Like it's still kind of like, sure. Why y'all be talking about me like that, man? I just be out here hooping. I was dunking. I was doing all the things that y'all do. But that 99 team, You wouldn't say that about Elton Brand. You wouldn't say that about McGetty. You wouldn't even say that about Carwell. You might say it about Shane Battier. That's a little bit of a different situation. But then after they got good with those guys and went back the other way and they were out there with Greg Paulus, like Reddick don't count because Reddick was cold, right? They was out there with the Greg Paulus's of the world. And then Krzyzewski looked around and was like, okay, now we got to go back the other way, right? And then it went back the other way. And then it got to, like, it wasn't like we just getting white dudes. It's like, we getting cold white dudes. Like, we going to the Boston Celtics strategy. Yeah, we need a white dude. Yeah, go get John Havlicek, right?
That is a strategy. I don't know if it was conscious. If you establish yourself as the place where cold white dudes go, like, you are then putting together a pretty good roster if you can get 70% of them, because yeah, you're not going to get 25% of, like, the cold black dudes. Yeah. And so once you bring a little too many cold black dudes, then it's like you can't get the cold white dudes. So, like, it is problematic and racist and stupid for so many reasons, but it ain't dumb strategy.
No, well, think about it this way. So, like, way back in the day when Notre Dame was, like, running it, a big part of why they could run it was every good Catholic player in America, they got them. Right? This is where you were going to go if you were a good, especially from up north, you're a good Catholic football player. Notre Dame was going to get you. There was no other place that you would think about going. I always say, you can truly tell the strength of a program's brand by the quality of the white dudes that they get. When you start going through, like, the top 25 on the rivals list in basketball from year to year, either the white dudes are going somewhere local, or they going to, like, Carolina, Duke, UCLA, like one of those big names. Like, that is a reflection of the strength of your brand. The problem is, like, if you get yourself too enamored with that idea, you're going to be out here with some bums, right? You're going to be out here with Greg Paulus getting dunked on every week and all that. This is why Duke is a thing. Duke is polarizing. Nobody's polarizing anymore. Like, there's no personality left in college basketball. It doesn't feel like there's no true renegade programs no more. There's no programs like Arkansas and Michigan, the ones we're talking about. I know Michigan got put on probation, but they weren't really renegades, but they were definitely kicking it different. You know what I mean? Like, nothing feels like that anymore with college basketball. And coaches at this point don't feel that same way. Like, a coach with the magnitude of Mike Krzyzewski, it ain't happening. Like, Jay Wright got 3 national championships. Don't nobody give a damn.
I didn't even realize he had 3 national championships.
Yeah, don't nobody care.
Yeah, I don't understand it. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out why, because, like, you would think that the personality would stay with the coaches in college. So, like, these places should have personalities, but maybe it's just with the general corporatization of all professional sports, which college sports is professional. Maybe it's just everyone kind of is corporatized and it's like, all right, we're just going to keep it this way. But you would think there is a lane there. I think Kentucky, I feel like they market themselves, I mean, not as a renegade program, but they market themselves differently.
They do. And by the way, it was 2 national championships for Jay Wright, not 3. My apologies there. Kentucky was the first to be like, want to go to the NBA? Like, we're not pretending like this is anything else. But what's happened with college basketball is you can't develop no affection for nobody. Like, I learned a lot about the way that people consume sports when I worked in North Carolina, right? Like, I learned how people consume college football because I was rooting for Texas while we were, well, not we, because I ain't go to school there, but you know what I mean? But I rooted for Texas when it was at, like, the best of Texas, 10 years in a row. I'm mad with any loss. I'm mad that we're not in the national championship game, like, all this stuff. Like, that's where I was. Those were 7-win programs. And you learn how people find the joy in a 7-win program. And it's a lot about the development of players and, like, the attachment and affection that you get from seeing a guy as a freshman. And then now they're 22 on the way out. You're like, wow, that guy's grown up. Wow, that guy's gotten a lot better and all that stuff. And since don't nobody good really do that, it doesn't happen. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't come through. And now the guys are leaving willy-nilly.
I also feel like, and this is partially a media construct, is championship obsession culture, which, like, I know you play to win the game, Herm, and I get it. Like, everyone is striving to win a championship, but it feels like when you watch those games in the past, you could enjoy these other little minor victories or beating a rival or watching somebody get better or a team improving, and that was good enough. But again, with the corporatization of all of this and with the media attention on all of it, it's like you either win in championships or you are a failure. No one else enjoys it and appreciates it. And then, sorry to ramble, but and then that seeps over into the level of entertainment we get from the product. Because, like, the stuff that you hate, the insurance fraud that we see from basketball players or the flopping or the homogeneity of playing styles, like all that stuff is a result of championship culture, where it's like, who cares about entertainment? We care about efficiency. Who cares right. about any of this other stuff? We care about efficiency.
Now, it's just, this stuff's supposed to be fun, right? So like, especially to me with college, when we talk about this, because look, man, it's 300 something schools playing basketball. It's 120 something schools playing D1 football. One of them is going to win. One of them, right? And so, like, I remember...
One of them out of five, by the way.
Right, right. Like, I remember when Indiana changed their state high school basketball tournament. So, for, like, people who don't realize, up until about 15 years ago, there was one state tournament in Indiana. Every high school in Indiana was in the same tournament, regardless of size. Yeah, that's the charm of the Hoosiers story, is that it was a little bitty school that ultimately won the state championship. But everybody's goals were calibrated according to what they were, like what kind of school they were. So if a little school just got one win, it was like, you know, NCAA tournament 15 seed beating a two type of thing.
That's your championship.
Right. That's what it was. And so I remember when they changed it, I thought it was okay. Because like in Texas, like with the football, for example, you have 6A, like now it goes all the way.
That's unsafe though.
Yeah, no, but this is what I'm saying. In Texas now they go all the way up to 6A. But they don't just go to 6A. There's 6A Division 1, 6A Division 2, 5A Division 1, 5A Division 2, 4A Division 1, 4A Division 2, right? We're just giving everybody a state championship. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. Everybody gets a championship. But that actually plays into what you're talking about, right? Like this obsession that the only thing that matters is if you win this ultimate prize. And if somehow you don't win this prize, you are somehow lesser. Because the phrase I hate the most, and it came up when somebody was talking to me about Russell Westbrook the other day. And they're like, well, you know, Russell Westbrook hasn't won anything. He's won everything but the championship. Yeah. He's been to the finals. He's won the MVP. All these literally won everything but a championship. And that is deemed hasn't won anything. And people that also stupid people throw that out. Just stupid and lazy.
It is ridiculous and it is stupid, but it is real because it does feel like it's the way that most people experience Russell is like, it's like critical of him and his style of play because it's not as efficient and because he hasn't won a championship. And like, it doesn't feel like our memory of Russell Westbrook is like, he's one of the all-time greats. It feels like we're cementing a memory of him as like, oh, he's a super flawed superstar you can't build around. That feels like what we're going to end up remembering about him.
Right, right. Like, you think I give a damn if Dominique Wilkins never won a championship?
Nope. I sure
you
don't.
Know what I'm saying? Like in the end, Charles Barkley, like it would have been great for Charles if Charles would have won a championship. That did not stop him from being Charles Barkley. Now, I do think that there's a generation that really doesn't understand this Charles Barkley thing, and maybe they would if Barkley would have been able to say that he was a champion. But like a guy like Hank Aaron in baseball, Hank Aaron won a championship in 1957. When we talk about Hank Aaron, we never talk about that championship. It's not that big a deal in like the greater discussion of him. Willie Mays, I forget. I mean, won a championship in New York. They never won a championship in San Francisco. Dog, don't nobody care. Barry Bonds never won a championship. Played for it, never won. Dog, don't nobody care. Like now, if you never got to a point, like, and this is the argument against Neek, is if you never played for it, that does put you in a different place than most of the all-time greats. Howard makes this point that just about every all-time great at almost every position in every sport has at least played for it. You know what I'm saying? So like, I get it maybe on that front, but there's so much other stuff that's going on. When we talk about this, there's so many more like interesting players that I don't necessarily need to judge you just because the stars didn't align and your team did not happen to win.
It's partially our fault, like I mentioned, but it is also more so, I think it's just the corporatization of all of this, because it feels like rather than fans, you guys are shareholders and you're at like a board meeting like, man, the returns weren't good enough. Let's get more efficient. And being a part of a board meeting, it ain't fun. Like, it is not a fun experience, which is, to your point, like, we're turning this all into work, which is not great. Like, I want to just, we talked about last week how sports is a unique entertainment property and that you could pay your money and not end up seeing what you hoped you were getting there to see. I think that also applies to this because the motivation of every other entertainment property, the main motivation is to entertain you.
Yes.
That's not it in sports. Like the entertainers in sports, their main motivation is to win.
Yes.
Which isn't always, is only entertain, is only like entertaining 100% of the time to the fans of that team.
Yeah, if I say, and the people that do want to entertain you, you judge them for it, right? But see, so this is what I don't get is, so I have players that I look at and I'm like, okay, you never go win with them, right? So Gilbert Arenas, when he played, was a great example of this, right? Never go win with Gilbert Arenas. He was so fun, right? But here's the thing. I didn't root for the Wizards. I didn't root for the Warriors. I don't give a damn if they win. Like, when I hear some of the hostility with Westbrook again, because it always, like, for me, it's just so much comes back to Westbrook. I love him. And part of why I love him is he took all of this in large part and was the bulletproof vest for Kevin Durant when all these things were going on, right? It just all got to be Russ's fault. And he was like, fine, I'll be that. I'm Russell Westbrook. I don't give a damn about none of y'all. But if you don't root for the Thunder, and most of y'all don't root for the Thunder because most of y'all ain't from no damn Oklahoma, why do you care? Why do you have any anger or hostility toward Russell Westbrook for taking those shots for a team that you don't root for? And yeah, I could see how if I rooted for them, it would drive me crazy when he gets too ramped up in the fourth quarter and keeps shooting all those shots long and he can't stop himself from taking them. But I don't root for them.
I'll take it a step further. Not why do you care, but why are you acting against your own self-interest? Who doesn't like watching Russell? Like, everyone, I'd rather watch Russell Westbrook play than 20 players who are better than him. Yes. Because, like, he's fun, explosive, exciting, unpredictable. Like, all the things that you say you want in entertainment, he is them. And somehow you're like, hey, be more boring.
Well, hold up. And this is where I get back on the Luka thing. Like, I'd been a Luka holdout in terms of, like, how, like, the contribution to winning type stuff, right? And I know that people are like, he's the best player on the Mavericks, and they do da-da-da all the time. But, dog, this dude takes so many shots. Like, the usage rate that he puts up in the, like, over 35, that is James Harden with the Rockets kind of territory. And we raise questions all the time about whether or not you could win with James Harden playing in the way that James Harden played. Like, how long does it go if he plays like he does before people are like, I don't know. You start talking about him like Russell Westbrook. He shoots threes at a clip that is about the Russell Westbrook type of clip. He's a different kind of enjoyable to watch, but enjoyable nonetheless, right? But, you know, like, when the
free throws have been a travesty lately, by the
yo,
way.
That's wild. Like, that's some wild
stuff.
Well,
he was at like 41% at one point, which is crazy. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, but like, when all that stuff goes down and all that stuff plays out, the enjoyment that you have for Luka right now, it should kind of carry. Carmelo is another great example of this. Because I think Carmelo's problem was, Carmelo got caught in a lag, right? As the game was changing and the style of play for which he had been rewarded was now being viewed as being antiquated. Like, why does he shoot all these long twos? Because he makes them. It's not like he's bad at it. Yeah. You know, like, he's making these shots that you don't want him to take. But Melo was so cold and Melo was so enjoyable. So I can say, yeah, there are players who are better than Melo. I do think that Melo was a bit overrated, but that didn't mean he wasn't Melo. That didn't mean it. Like, watching Melo just hold that ball and jab step you on the wing as you try to figure out, like, what are you going to do? When is he going to make this move? That was excellent. I don't care if Melo never wins a championship.
I mean, he spent every day of his life from the time he was probably like 10 years old perfecting all the stuff that we thought you needed to perfect. Because, like, that's what we saw in the age in Jordan. We saw him in that area working that. We saw Hakeem working that. We saw all those people, the best players, working that whole area that he perfected. And then he got to the league, and y'all was like, nah. Like, it wasn't still enjoyable to watch. You're right. Like, I thoroughly enjoy Carmelo, and he's from Baltimore, so, like, that, there's that tie-in. But I always like Melo and cape for him unnecessarily sometimes because, like, chill out. He's great.
Well, they also, like, why don't Melo pass the ball more to who?
Yeah.
To who? Who are these people that use that Melo? The one time that Melo was on a complete team, they went to the Western Conference Finals. There's something to enjoy about these things. Like, that's actually one of the interesting things about, like, the people that really, like, watch high school football. In that way. Again, I'm from Texas. There's like just people, you know, they really watch it. But like, if there's a super cold dude playing high school football, we don't care about whether that team be out here winning. Like nobody's, there's all kinds of dudes out here super cold in high school, ain't win a damn thing. And ain't nobody like, yeah, but you know, we ain't winning nothing.
That is true. I remember that. Like, some of my games were packed out. We only made the playoffs one year. And there's no media to care about that. But nobody was like, hey, better be more efficient. We gotta get this together. The one dude that I feel like, and you brought this up before, Trae Young. they're going to turn on him at some point, but he shows some maturation in this playoff process of like controlling the game so much so that I think people appreciate him. But so far, I know Dame Lillard's game was great. I enjoyed those 12 threes and in clutch moments. But I got to admit, the image of the playoffs that I've enjoyed the most was the Knicks fans standing to give their team a standing ovation as they're about to get knocked out of playoffs and Trey pulling one from 33, banging it on them, and then going back and bowing to them fools while they still standing up. Like, I don't care nothing about the Hawks or Trey Young or the Knicks, but that was cold.
Yo, the thing for me is, and I've said this, I hate his game.
I know, but you love that moment.
I love the fact that I hate his game, right? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't hate him. I don't have any personal animus against Trey Young. But it's more fun having that, right? And yes, his game, pretty inefficient, right? He can't guard anybody in the world. But Trey Young in Madison Square Garden, it's quiet in here. It's quiet in here. Yo, and then after the game, why'd you take the bow? I hear they have, they do a lot of shows here. And that's what you do when the show is over.
Ooh.
Here for it. I don't care if he ever wins anything. And you know what? This will make it more fun if he never wins anything, right? Like, this will make it better, but this is supposed to be fun. I saw some games on Wednesday night where we had a little pushing and shoving with the Knicks and the Hawks. Your boy Kleber, or however you say his name, getting into it with Marcus Morris in that game against the Clippers and the Mavericks. Bring it back, man. Like, we have led, you know what? This is what it is. We've legislated passion out of basketball.
Corporatization of all of this. Like, that's the word for it, because all of this is corporatizing it. Like, yes. Let's keep it clean. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's do it. Like, all of it from the competitive side to the on-court product, we've corporatized it while the fans are acting more and more reckless.
Yo, I was watching video today before we got on, because I've been thinking about Danny Ainge since he left his job. And like, well, people forget this. And I guess now you forget, because if you're young, you just don't know it. Danny Ainge was a good NBA player. Danny Ainge was an all-star. Danny Ainge also was like an all-state football player at quarterback and played Major League Baseball. Like, don't get this twisted. Danny Ainge was an incredible athlete, right? That's how you wind up being a starter for the 86 Celtics, because somebody told Red Auerbach, there's this cold white boy you might want to check out. And he was like, you think I haven't already? You know, like he had, Red Auerbach had Google alerts on cold white boy in
before
1971.
Google.
Yeah, 1971. They were like, hey, we got one for you. You know what I'm saying? But Danny Ainge, there's a legendary headline from the Boston Globe, Tree Bites Man. And it's because Danny Ainge got into it with Tree Rollins, I believe in a playoff game. And they got into a tussle and they were on the ground and people heard Danny Ainge screaming at the top of his lungs. And it was because Tree Rollins was trying to bite his finger off. 7 foot tall, like they called him Tree for the reason you think. 7 foot tall Tree Rollins tried to bite his finger off. And so I Googled that because I hadn't watched the video in quite a while and I completely missed how it went. So Ainge and Tree had been getting into it, jostling down low, whatever it was, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then at one point, they're running down the floor. And I think Ainge did something small to Rollins, but I'm not sure which. Tree Rollins hit him with the forearm shiver to the dome. And you know what Danny Ainge did? Danny Ainge looked at him, squared up, got low, lowered his shoulder, went into his thighs, brought him to the ground, and then they scrapped it out, right? If I had to guess, nobody got ejected because they didn't really eject people for stuff like that back in the day.
Which is
you
crazy.
Know how bad I would appreciate something like that in the NBA right now? People are like, yo, NBA dudes can't fight. No, NBA dudes are not allowed to fight. I assure you there is somebody in the NBA that you don't want no problems with, but they completely legislated this out of the game because y'all couldn't handle it. Y'all couldn't handle no fun.
First of all, there's not somebody in the NBA that you don't want no problems with. Everybody in the NBA, you don't want no problems with, common viewer or listener. Like, just, let's be clear about that. Again, and I'm beating this term in the ground, but it's the same thing as like the insurance company or the toilet paper company or whatever. Like, they don't want to be associated with that. A lot of times that is coded as black. They don't want to be associated with the black thing. They don't want to be associated with the dangerous thing. So in order to get more money in these doors, we're going to clean it all up and make it all better.
Yeah, but people liked it more. That's the ironic thing about it, is people liked it more. Like, look, let me tell you, part of what made me look up that Ainge clip at Rollins was looking at the Mavs as we discussed the composition of their roster. And then Kleber was not scared at all, right? And Marcus Morris, I'm looking at that. I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be like back in the day, baby.
I mean, not scared. That'll get you a lot of points with me, because I feel like in this series, at the beginning of the series, like, I always appreciated Luka, but I'm not a Luka guy. But at the beginning of the series, when he was putting Pat Bev to sleep,
yes,
and barking at him, I was like, oh, Luka, you might be on my team now. Those are the entertaining moments that endear those people to me, because maybe it's because I identify with them, or maybe it's because I want to identify with them. Either way, I love it.
Yo, Luka, not scared.
No, and I love it.
And that's the charm of it, and that's a big part about the white, why the white dudes like him so much. Yeah. Luka, not scared. And I would like to know a little bit more about where exactly in Slovenia Luka is from, because we have to remember something that, like, in this country, because of race and all this stuff, like, we associate the hood with just black people, right?
Yeah.
But if everybody in your country white, that means that it's some white dudes living in the hood. And by the way, these are hoods coming out of the shadow of that communism. It's some hard dudes over there.
That's the point, is that we think, because American culture is so pervasive and we live over here, we think that the projects is as tough as it can get. No, my friend. You ain't been to a favela. You ain't been to Eastern Europe. There are places in this world that are tougher than Marcy Projects by a long shot. And then people who come out of there, ain't scared of you.
Yo, think about this, right? My brother had a partner, Andre Woolridge. Andre used to play basketball at the University of Iowa in the 90s. I think he might have been a Big Ten Player of the Year. And he was from Omaha. He was from Omaha, Nebraska. And I always remember, because my brother put me on an email with Dre and a couple other people. And I hit my brother and I was like, who the hell is Corn Hustler at whateverdomain.com? Because that's what he called himself, the Corn Hustler. Not the Corn Husker.
I like it.
The corn hustler. Right? My brother grew up in Atlanta. My brother tried to clown on him about Omaha. And he was like, I'd drop you off in Omaha. You wouldn't make it home. You know why? Because there is somewhere in Omaha where this is absolutely the case. And all I'm saying is, if it's like that in Nebraska, it was due in Nebraska. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's like that in Nebraska, it is certainly like that somewhere in Slovenia.
I can name all the times in my life that I've seen a gun. I can also name all the times in my life where I've heard gunshots. Some of these people, they can name the days when they did not see or hear those things. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not from the hood. I'm not claiming that or whatever, but like, and I suspect that's the same thing for people who are from tougher spots, where like the most dangerous and scary thing they have is like, man, watch out, because there's a bit of a drug feud in this neighborhood. And that's terribly scary. Think about living in a country where you are growing up in a civil war, not rival gangs, the government versus the people.
Yes.
You think they're going to be intimidated by you? We don't know anything about Luka's background. If you show promise young in some of these places, which they'll take you up out of there, because like Messi's from Argentina, but Messi grew up in Spain, you know, like they get you up out of there quickly.
But also, we don't know like what the pickup basketball culture is in these places. Especially these places where toughness is like a serious variable. Like, look, man, it's America now. We are now a service-based economy. Right. We are not a work-with-your-hands economy. And I think that's part of what's happening too. When you talk about the corporatization, is that toughness as a noble quality is something that's kind of fading for men in American culture. We just don't look at it the same way. There's nobody in the NBA that we look at and we're like, yo, he's tough. Like, that's the reason why we rock with him, is because of his toughness. That ain't what it is. But I assure you, you over there in Croatia, one of them starts with S, ends in A's. Pick one. It don't even matter. You go run full court with some dudes that you don't know. I bet you it is rough and tumble.
Yeah, the things that we now as a society consider hyper-masculinity is like, that is a way of life in some of these places.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we're like, it's okay to talk about mental health. It's okay to say you're feeling depressed. That is weakness in some of these places. So
yeah, or even you could talk about it, but even still, buck up, boy. Like, right? Like even like, I'm like, wow, y'all. I mean, I think there's room to empathize with people's struggles while also being like, all right, now let's get to work.
That reminds me, I think I've come to this realization relatively recently, where when issues of race come up, or black achievement in America, and it happens in sports a lot, and so a lot of people are talking about it, and I find myself seeing that I understand the point that some people are making, where that want to focus more on Black people trying to do things differently. But I also like feel like it's more important to focus on like addressing the larger systemic issues and the impact that the people in power have. But it seems like there are two messages, you know, and both messages should be sent, but only certain subsets should hear the message. Like the message to, you know what I mean? So like, I understand that the message is, it's okay to talk about your mental health issues. You should be comfortable being outspoken about that and seeking help. But also, buck up, because we're not going to change this. And like, as a parent, you think about that a lot, where it's like, I would talk to my kids like, yeah, be sad, be embrace that, be honest with that. But also, it's a cold world out there. And sometimes shit ain't gonna work out and you just gonna have to fight through.
Yeah, I love you, they don't.
Yeah.
It gets there. But no, like I just, like all these things, the NBA, like I'm just thinking so much, how much better the NBA would be. We just had the occasional elbow, right? The occasional hard foul, the occasional confrontation. And what's wild about it is we show those clips of the old days, like on SportsCenter or something like that, and everybody loves them. And then if the same thing happens right now, people flip out. Like, it's not even a matter of people don't realize what it was. It's just so wild that we don't go back and look at those old fights and be like, wow, we were living like savages. We're like, damn, the good old days. And then if the same exact thing happens right now, now we're going to call them savages. Like, you talk about the corporatization. College basketball did it first and harder because they put in a rule that is not discussed nearly enough, which is if you get a technical foul in college, it is also a personal foul. They legislated player technical fouls completely out of the game at that point, right? Now, granted, I don't think players need to be getting texts and everything else, but all these things that involve expression of self in college sports altogether, they got rid of them all. No touchdown celebration. I don't even think they even allowed to spike the ball. You know what I'm saying? Like, no touchdown, nothing, everything else. Somehow they thought it was better to take the fun out. And as I've contended before, because they don't want y'all to think about that these are Black people.
The term evolution is always considered like a positive thing. Like it's synonymous with progress. But evolution just means that like things are changing, right? And so it feels like it's a societal evolution along with a sports evolution that are like happening. And some of those things are for the better, but some of those things are a lot less entertaining. The one thing about basketball that I think they have figured out, and I guess football is like this too, is in tight games, I've enjoyed watching the playoffs in part because the playoffs are chess and not checkers. Right. Like the complexity of game-to-game adjustments and play-to-play adjustments don't happen in a regular season. So like we complained about the homogeneity of NBA basketball. I don't get that sense when I'm watching the games now because like the games feel different. The teams feel different. And it's fun to watch. But the one thing that NBA has that's always great is all that don't matter when you get down to the last possession.
Yep.
The last possession, you know what you're going to get in a tight game? You're going to get the man who thinks he's the man with the ball at the top of the key and everybody else standing and watching.
Yep. We ain't get no set.
That is great. And I saw that Dame so many times. That part of the entertainment property is like, at the end of every action movie, you always going to get the hero trying to overtake the villain. You never going to get some random B character finishing off the end of it. Like, that's the same thing in sport or in basketball, at least.
Well, three games into a playoff series, everybody know everybody sets.
Yeah.
You ain't fooling nobody by then. It's somewhat similar in football, but football, like single elimination, so many other variables and all this stuff. But your weaknesses in basketball become exposed in a completely different way. Guys who can shoot 82 games cannot shoot anymore. Guys who seem like they could play halfway decent defense for 82 games cannot do it anymore. 15 footers become 18 footers in the playoffs. And then what's it come down to? My guy and your guy. And let's see, and let's see what we got. And as much as people want to talk about, you know, the proliferation strategy and all that's cool. Like, if you're a nerd, and I'm not saying nerd in this case in a bad way, right? Like, if you're somebody that has an advanced knowledge of these things, it is interesting to watch all the different things that change and everything else, right? But, nah, man, when it really comes down to it, none of us got into this to think. None of us fell in love with this because it was so smart.
I'll listen to, like, history podcasts, or I'll read a book that is, like, Byzantine and its explanation of something complicated, and I will enjoy that process. but I don't call it fun. You know, like, yeah. I don't know what the word is for it. It's like, I enjoy learning sometimes. I'll watch World War II docs with my son, who's really into that stuff. And I'll be like, this is fun. This is cool. This is interesting. But it ain't fun. It ain't like we playing Xbox.
Like, I wouldn't pay to go watch it, you know? Like, those kinds of things. Like, maybe I'll pay to get into a museum, but I ain't paying to get into a lecture. The homie Coates. We love Coates. Coates is great stuff, right? I ain't gonna buy a ticket to go hear him talk. I'll pay for the book, right? I might go pay to watch the movie.
I don't think you mean that necessarily. I think you would absolutely pay, I think, to go listen to somebody talk, but I wouldn't do it on a Friday.
I'm saying this. If you tell me on Friday night, I could pay 50 to go see Coates, or I could pay 50 to go see Anderson .Paak, I am paying the 50 to go see Andy. That's all I'm saying.
I understand. I agree. But I mean, I guess I'm defending myself because I have paid. I don't know what we had to pay, but I think I bought something to... Oh, I paid fundraiser money to go see Coates talk at a church in D.C. And I paid money
that's a little different.
To go see Obama talk. And neither of those experiences would I say were fun, but they were enriching, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, we just talk about something different.
Yeah. And I wouldn't do it on a Friday is my point. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Both of them things was on like Wednesdays.
Yeah. Like all these things are supposed to be fun. And like we talk about Krzyzewski, as much as I didn't like Duke, Duke made it more fun, right? Their presence made it more fun. And we have so few people and so few things now that just make it more fun. I was thinking about with the Nets, because I know we got to wrap this soon, but like the Nets, it's so wild that they're so good and it's no fun. They don't even look like they're having fun. They don't give you no, like maybe it's just because it's too easy, right? They don't even give themselves enthusiastic high fives. There's no one dude on that team. Even Joe Harris, he don't even really count as a fan favorite. You know what I'm saying? Like they don't even have a fan favorite. We got to bring the fun back, man.
I think it's the hyper-focus on championships. They like, none of this matters. None of this matters whether this season was a success, whether we can be happy or whether we fail. All that matters is how we do in the championship. But I do think that the great thing about villains in sports or teams that are considered villainous is it makes everybody care. Because right now, you only care about your team if you're locked in or your players. But if there's a team that it's okay to hate, then you care about all of their games too.
Yes.
Which makes it like, you know, like that's what really makes sports at its highest. I've never enjoyed watching sports nearly as much as I did when I was a kid, because that was before it became work for me. And that was when I cared. Like I really, really cared. Like to the point where I'd be sad for 2 days if my team lost. And watching those games, like I guess that's what gamblers, it's part of the thrill of gambling. You have bought into this experience. And I haven't felt that for sports in a long time. The closest I got to it was that Heat year. And that wasn't about my team. That was just about hating y'all for hating them.
Yes. I was all in on that.
I wanted them to destroy everybody. That Dallas final crushed me.
Honestly, man, nothing more fun to me just on a year-to-year basis than living in Durham on Carolina Duke days. Because one thing about it was, you're like, if you're not free from Durham, you need to understand, Durham don't rock with Duke like that neither. Like, it's changed up a little bit because, you know, people from Durham want to have something to put on for. But no, Durham ain't even rock with them either. But it was just me and my partners, we do the same thing every day, right? Like, I'm wearing this shirt I'm wearing right now, Bob's Cuisine on 9th Street. Gonna put it up there for those of y'all watching the video. My people over there, we go there for lunch. Like the plan was always the same and it was just always in the air. Because it was fun. And even if it was because those teams were generally good, even when one of them wasn't, didn't matter. It was fun. We are here for fun. And we have fun on Foxworth Fridays right here. Dominique Foxworth. Check him out at The Undefeated. Check him out on Highly Questionable, on Get Up. He'll be all over the place. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing 3 times a week. Gabe Bassay and Tony Colatiude for one more day. Handle things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.